Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, I got to sit down with Dr. Fuchsia Sirwa. She is a professor of social and health psychology at University of Durham in the UK, but originally from Ontario, Canada. She now focuses her research on the art of procrastination and why people procrastinate, the habits and emotions around it, and the effects that procrastination has on our health, if you can believe that also. We went all over with regards to if it is specific or more so specific to younger generation, teens, students versus adults, how that looks, if it's a learned behavior, if technology helps support procrastination, and all of the things. So today was a great, really interesting conversation. And if you find yourself procrastinating in certain areas of your life, because really most of us do, then tune in today. Hey, it's your host, Brittany, and welcome to the Mom Sweat Sanity Podcast, where we talk all things life, health, fitness, kids, relationships, you name it, nothing is off the table. A little bit of just me and a whole lot of knowledgeable guests. So throw on your Lulus to run or to mom, grab yourself a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, and join us as we unpack life's pressing topics and learn a little bit more of the who, what, whys of it all. Or at the very least, get real, share some wisdom, and grab practical tips to help in our daily lives. Well, thank you so much for being here. Now, I want to say your name correctly. So Dr. Sirois?
Sirwa.
Sirwa. Okay.
Yeah, French. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say that. I'm like, I'm not going to assume.
Right.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries at all. Thanks for the invite to come on and speak with you.
Well, I would love to know just a little bit about you and your background, where you're from, where you're located now, and kind of how you got into this realm of work and research.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, currently I'm in Durham, England, which is in the northeast of England. And I've been in the UK since 2015. So that's, what's that, like 8 years, 9 years, something like that now coming up. It's going to be 9 years this year. Yeah. So I'm originally from Canada.
Okay.
And
are you Quebec?
Well, no. So I took my husband's name. He's French Canadian, but he's not from Quebec either.
Okay.
but we were living in Quebec before we moved to the UK.
Oh, so, too funny. Yeah. I'm out here on the West Coast in Vancouver.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Whereabouts were you from then?
I'm originally from Toronto.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I have family there.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. I've got family out in BC, not in Vancouver, but out in, where was she? I don't know if she's in Mission now. She's moved around a lot out there. Yeah.
Totally. Better place out there. Less traffic the further you get out of town.
Yeah.
Oh, and then what took you then over to England?
Just really, I guess, work opportunities. So it had a lot to do with some of the funding structures that got changed in Canada, and they would no longer support research that did both health and social aspects of psychology. You had to split your research. And it's like, I'm sorry, this is what I do. And so yeah, I couldn't get funding because I was at this interface after they artificially split the CIHR and the Social Sciences Humanities Research Council funding structure. So actually, I was a Canada research chair when I was in Canada.
Oh,
which is like, you know,
that's kind so of unfortunate the... that they did that. I mean, that's so short-sighted, it feels.
Yeah. Yeah, that was back in 2009 they made that change. And it's only been recently, you know, over 10 years later, they're going, should we change things back? It's like, yeah, kind of late now. You've already had your brain drain.
Totally shocking. You know, so,
I know.
Oh my God.
I still know researchers in Canada, and they all try and find tricks around it. Have been loopholes. And it's like, you shouldn't have to do that. You should just be able to do your research. So it's placed a lot of restrictions on anybody that's worked in areas with a health that isn't medical research, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, sorry, getting on a tangent there.
So, no.
But I mean, the UK is one of the best, you know, if not the best place in the world in terms of research on the interface of social psychology and health psychology, which is where I primarily work. So, yeah, that's sort of my background. I did my education in Ottawa at Carleton. And I started off in health psychology. I still do health, but I go back and forth between health and personality and social psychology. And when I was in the department there in Carleton University Psychology Department, Tim Pitchell, who's like one of the leading foremost experts on procrastination, was there in that department. And he kind of, you know, took me aside and showed me this study that found that people who procrastinate had poor health. And he thought, this is, you know, what do you think of this? And I thought, this is really interesting. Now, the study itself left more questions unanswered than answered, and didn't really answer the question as to why that might be. So with him, we conducted a study with students looking at procrastination and stress and health behaviors and health, and tried to start unraveling some of these relationships. And I just kind of kept going with it. I never set out to be a procrastination researcher.
Oh my gosh.
It was so fascinating. And nobody else was doing the work too. So you kind of, once you start it, you're thinking, well, this is important. Like, who would have thought that something that everyone does and jokes about actually is really, really bad for your health?
That is so fascinating. Oh my gosh. I feel like I can only imagine the spiral that you go down on that, because then you just say procrastination and there's so many questions and reasons and whatnot. So I'm so excited to have you here, but I didn't even think about the health side of it. So I'll definitely get back to that one. But what would you then say is the definition of procrastination?
So there's a general floating definition that most of us in the field who study procrastination use, and it's commonly viewed as having certain key components. So it's a common form of self-regulation failure, right, where people just don't regulate their behaviors. That's pretty clear and obvious. But it specifically involves the delay, the unnecessary and voluntary delay. So there's two things there. It's not a necessary delay. There's not an emergency. Your house isn't on fire, right? You know, yeah. It's voluntary. Someone didn't tell you to delay, right? And it's of an intended task, right? So a lot of people say they're procrastinating, and it's things that they never really intended to do. They never set out an intention and said, I'm going to do this, right? So as soon as you say, I'm going to do
this.
Put
upon you almost.
Yeah. And, okay. You know, or even if someone put it upon you and you agree to that, you still have that intention formation. Okay. It gets a bit trickier when it's somebody else that's instigating the intention. And that actually is sort of ripe ground for procrastination, because we do tend to procrastinate on things that we don't feel that sort of sense of ownership over. But anyways, yeah, so voluntary, unnecessary, it's an intended task, something you said you would do. And usually it has some importance. And you delay the task then too. And this could be delaying in the start or the completion of the task. So there's a couple of places where that procrastination can occur. And you delay it despite knowing there's going to be negative consequences either for yourself or other people. And that's where I think the importance ties in too. Like, if it wasn't an important task, there probably wouldn't be negative consequences. Mm-hmm. Because it is a somewhat important thing that you went and said, I'm going to do this thing. Not doing it means that there's going to be some kind of, you know, domino effect or backlash, and it's just not going to be good.
Oh my gosh. So what do you find, like, is there a point in time where we consciously acknowledge that we are in this mode of procrastination, or, and, you know, then all of a sudden there's what turns us into being in the moment of actually actualizing, we have to get that thing done?
So I think a lot of times when people are procrastinating, they may not realize that they are. Sometimes they can, you know, justify or rationalize their delay. A common scenario is where, you know, someone will be sitting down at their desk and they'll look around their office and go, oh, it's really messy in here. Like, I need to have a really calm, clean environment before I can sit down and do my work. And so next thing you know, they're madly cleaning, like to the nth degree, right? The whole office. And not thinking that that is actually procrastinating, because they, oh, well, I need this to be able to work. Well, you don't actually need that clean environment to work, right? But what it's doing is, because you're not sitting down to do the thing you said you would do, is it's making you feel productive. Right. So you're fooling yourself. I'm not lazy, because we have this idea of thinking that people procrastinate are lazy. So if we get busy with other things that are not necessary and not important, right, then we can use those tasks to fool ourselves into thinking that we're not procrastinating. But we're not using that time and that energy to do that one thing that is pressing that does need to be done. And so I don't think it's always in everyone's awareness right away, but eventually it is. And so, you know, we can tell ourselves all kinds of things about why we're not starting. We need more information. Sometimes that's a valid reason. We might think it's going to take longer than what we anticipated to, or it's going to be more difficult. And I just can't deal with that right now. Right. And so, you know, it does take a certain amount of stepping back and reflection to actually catch yourself when you're procrastinating. Right. And usually you don't see that until that due date or deadline or the phone calls or emails start coming in. And then you kind of realize, yeah, I haven't been doing the thing I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like me and the budget at home here. My husband's like, come on, it's our weekly review. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm getting on it. It's the one thing I don't want to be doing. I'd rather do all the other things. So I push it off all the time. So would you say procrastination is a bit of a learned behavior?
It is a reinforced behavior, which is not, it can be learned or not learned. So I mean, it sort of gets down to the heart of what happens when we procrastinate and why we procrastinate, right? Which is we're avoiding the negative emotions attached to a particular task. We're not avoiding the task. We're avoiding the emotions, the emotional state, the fear of failure, the anxiety, the stress, the frustration, the anticipated boredom, the anticipated difficulty, you know, all these things. We're not in state to manage those emotions internally. So we manage them externally by disengaging from the task. Now, I've just lost my train of thought with your original question of what you asked there.
No, just if it's a learned behavior.
Learned, yeah. So what happens then when you actually disengage from that task, you're giving yourself an emotional relief, right? So you're saying, I can't deal with these emotions. I feel too stressed, too anxious. I'm too afraid things aren't going to work out. So you push the task aside, feel an immediate sense of relief. Yeah. You've now engaged in short-term mood repair. You've now rewarded yourself from disengaging from that task that was making you feel really uncomfortable, right? Because of the negative emotions. And so now you've reinforced the procrastination because you've gotten a reward for it. Your mood feels better. You don't have to think about this thing. Oh, I can smile again. I can feel a little bit more at ease, at least for a little while, but it doesn't last, right? Uh-huh. So it's a type of emotion regulation, but it's not an effective type because it comes back to bite you. Because then we know from the research that people, after they have disengaged and had some momentary relief from those negative emotions, then the feelings of, oh, I still have to do this thing. And oh, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get on with doing it? I'm procrastinating again. Oh, I feel so ashamed. I feel so guilty. So now a whole other generation of negative emotions comes in and sweeps in and adds to all those initial feelings that drove you to disengage from that task in the first place. And so it can kind of snowball, right?
So, and is this where it would correlate then into the health, the poor health and how it relates to procrastination?
Yeah, that's one of the routes through which it can do. Yeah. So you've got all these negative thoughts. We know that people that procrastinate, especially habitually, tend to be very hard on themselves, very self-critical. So that generates a lot more negative emotions, a lot more stress, right? Which is only serves to keep them avoiding the task more, right? But it's the stress from those negative thoughts. Not only does it perpetuate the procrastination, but it also can then, especially if it's, you know, happening fairly regularly, can compromise your health. So then you're feeling stressed every day at the back of your mind. You know, you should be doing this thing. You're not doing it. You can't bring yourself to do it. And, you know, stress has these very immediate impacts on our health, right? It suppresses the immune system, makes you more susceptible to all those flu and cold bugs that are going around, you know. It might interfere with your sleep, give you some insomnia, which further weakens your resistance, you know, to staying healthy.
It's like a hamster wheel.
Yeah. It can give you headaches, muscle aches and strains, digestive issues. So these are the sorts of problems when we first started looking at procrastination health that we were seeing in students. They were self-reporting, people who, you know, students who chronically procrastinate were reporting a higher number of these types of, you know, acute problems that can seem to be stress-related.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying students, that is a question I had. Does it look different in like teenagers versus adults? Are you saying students because of the stress level of academics that they have and the things that they're trying to juggle? How does that look differently?
Well, so it with the stress, it doesn't necessarily look differently. Where it does look differently is with the health behavior. So there's actually two roots. Okay. So it's not just that you're stressed. So the other thing we know is when people are more stressed and you're worried about things, you tend to not look after yourself. So you want to do more things to feel good. And that means being a couch potato and binge watching Netflix and not going to the gym or for that run and maybe eating chocolate cake and lots of, you know, chips and junk food instead of eating healthy because it makes you feel good immediately, right?
It's the same sort of thing.
You're looking for that, you know, that mood boost, right? And so you're not engaging in sort of health promoting behaviors. But of course, in students who are quite, you know, young and healthy and robust, what we found is that the health behaviors doesn't really, they do engage in poor health behaviors, but it doesn't explain their poor health. But when you look at adults, now you're getting into adults in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Now those health behaviors, the avoidance of those health behaviors, you know, when you're chronically procrastinating and the higher stress, that does translate into poor health. And we've done a couple of different studies. In one study, I had a sample of almost 1,000 people. And then from that sample, there was about 180 or so that had high blood pressure, hypertension, or cardiovascular disease. And I compared them to kind of a healthy sample of about 500 people that had no physical health problems, no chronic illnesses, nothing, just a really good, clean bill of health, and compared them on their scores of this, you know, a tendency to procrastinate regularly. Not surprisingly, the people with the poor heart health had significantly higher levels of chronic procrastination. But there's lots of things that can, you know, explain poor heart health. So then ran a more complex model, throwing in, you know, age and gender and even other personality factors that are known, well known to predict having poor heart health. And I thought, oh, that's going to wipe out the procrastination. And it didn't. Actually, procrastination was the only personality factor that remained. It wiped out the other big factors that we tested. Yeah. And it worked out to being, I mean, this is this cross-sectional, but it's still very highly suggestive because what we were doing is trying to predict, use these factors to predict, were you in the healthy group or were you in the poor heart health group? And so those chronic procrastination scores, along with their other, you know, controlling for all these social demographic factors, it basically worked out to that for every increase in one mean point on that scale. So it's a 1 to 5 scale, right? So if your score went up by one on your chronic procrastination tendency, your risk of being in the poor heart health group went up by 62%.
Wow. That is huge.
Yeah, it is huge. I was shocked by the finding. I said, wait a second, this can't be right. But no, it was. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, I mean, we're not following these people over time, but it's kind of like, this is a tendency. It's like a personality trait at that point. So it is suggesting then that over time, this can have very serious implications for you know, your health. And like I said, we've tested this with community adult samples and find a similar sort of thing. I'm just finished writing up a paper on procrastination in nurses. And we found the same thing again.
Do you find, so gender-wise too, like if we're going women specific, are there correlations between like time of month hormonal changes that affect procrastination also?
We haven't looked at that actually. So, and I don't know that it necessarily would, unless, you know, you would think that hormonal changes might affect your capacity to regulate your emotions.
Yeah, so, exactly. Probably there.
Yeah. So I mean, that's something that to be investigated. So to the extent that you know, you're just not as good at managing your emotions at certain times of the month, you may be more prone to procrastinate because, you know, underlying the tendency to procrastinate is poor emotion regulation.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And just the motivation level because of that at the same time. So in terms of like going back to 62%, that's so massive. Is there strategies or interventions to make it more of a habit that you do not procrastinate? How would you address that?
So I think obviously it would be great, so just change it as a habit. But yeah. I think, you know, unlike other behaviors, it's more complex than just, you know, drinking, you know, a liter of water a day, mm-hmm. or, you know, unplugging from the phone at night, which are like single behaviors, right? Procrastination can happen across a variety of areas. You can procrastinate on your health, you can procrastinate at work, you can procrastinate in family and personal relationships. There's just a whole range of areas and different forms that behavior can take. So it's not a single behavior, so it's harder to get it into sort of a habit type of framework. But more importantly, it's what drives it too, right? So habits are things we just start doing automatically because they're easy. And yes, procrastination is easy and it's reinforced. But if you really want to tackle it, then you have to go to the core, to the source of it. And the source is these negative emotions, right? So first of all, understanding what negative emotions are there that are driving procrastination. And then also, I mean, engaging in certain types of emotion regulation strategies, even more general ones, mindfulness. We've run some randomized controlled trials looking at mindfulness-based practices, say in students' populations, and other researchers have done similarly and found that that reduces a tendency to procrastinate. If you give people the tools to manage their emotions in a healthier and more effective manner. So in other words, effective meaning long-lasting, not short-term, and then it comes back to bite you, right?
Yeah.
That actually has been scientifically shown to reduce procrastination.
Interesting. Yeah. I hear too, you know, when people are like, start your day off with the hardest thing on your plate. And maybe you or we as a society feel like the hardest thing is like more physically or more actually that big task, opposed to the maybe one thing that you're putting off that might not be the hardest thing, but
exactly.
Again, you're procrastinating that. So maybe starting with that, being more mindful about the procrastination will give you that like success and win for the rest of your day.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a good point. I mean, certainly, yeah, doing the small things. And I think that's a lot around too. Like sometimes it's not just, you know, I always say it's a trend. These are the emotions that we have about a task that can prompt and drive procrastination and even maintain it are transactional emotions. It's a transaction between you and the task. There's something about that task that brings up your self-doubt, that brings up your perfectionism, that brings up your fear of failure, brings out your low tolerance for frustration or boredom or whatever else, or stress, you know, et cetera, anxiety, uncertainty, all these. It's a full range. And, you know, it's going to be different for every person. But understanding what it is about that task, what the emotional tone of that task is, that's sort of the first step. And then you can, you know, think about what's the source of that emotion? Where is that coming from? Is it coming from, you know, me thinking too far ahead and overthinking things and actually doing a bit of emotional time traveling where I think, oh, okay, I can imagine I'm going to sit down, I'm going to try and do this. I've never done this before. It's going to be so hard. It's going to take me forever. It's going to be so difficult. And we work ourselves up in it into some future that doesn't exist with this task that we haven't started. And then we go, oh, that's too much. I can't start it. And we procrastinate, right? So that's one source, right? Another might just simply be we're looking at the task in the wrong way. We're looking at it as this big, overwhelming thing. Like you said, do that big, difficult thing, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you can take big, difficult, complex tasks and you can break them down into a bunch of small, you know, tasks, a bunch of smaller frogs, I guess is the saying there with like, you've got two frogs, eat the big frog first. No, break it down into a bunch of small frogs, a bunch of small tasks. And like you said, when you do each one of those, you'll get that satisfaction and that confidence that, hey, I can actually do this. Right. And that feeds into another side of things too, which is I think the myth that people have that I've got to feel motivated. And if I don't feel motivated, I can't start.
But by doing is you're getting the motivation.
You get the motivation. Yeah. Motivation comes from doing, not the other way around. So yeah, a lot of it is some of the myths that we have about procrastination and motivation and how we look at tasks, but breaking things down, making them more manageable. And also, if you're not sure about something, sometimes it's okay to say, I need to ask questions. Mm-hmm. I need more information, right?
And even as you said about like the going inwards and mindfulness, I think like even just asking, being more aware and asking yourself those questions, it's almost like a direct flip on certain things that I know I'm procrastinating at the moment, but would feel so good just to get off the plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just asking, why is it that I am procrastinating on that? Becoming, you know, that mindful awareness of what's going on rather than just sort of reacting to the emotions. And because that's when we react to those emotions that we're going to avoid, right? We're going to avoid those emotions and anything associated with them. And that is at the heart of procrastination. It's a form of avoidant coping. But it doesn't give us long-term results. It doesn't give us the satisfaction of accomplishing those tasks that we really, like you said, we feel better if it's off our plate, but for some reason we can't bring ourselves to get to that point where we can get it off our plate.
Absolutely. Do you find that there's influence of procrastination and behavior due to technology and social media?
So yeah, and I get asked that question a lot, and a lot of people associate social media and digital distractions with procrastination. So here's the deal. I think the way to think about those things is that they're part of what I would refer to as a procrastinogenic environment. Right? We hear about obesogenic environments, right? Like with lots of easy snack foods and junk foods, and they promote obesity. Well, you can have a procrastinogenic environment similarly that has a lot of things in it that makes it easier to procrastinate, but it's not going to cause you to procrastinate, right?
Yeah.
Because the cause is coming from within. It's an inability to grapple and sort of take those negative emotions head on. So if you are having difficulty with those negative emotions, and then you're in an environment with lots of distractions that makes it easier, well, yeah, the chances of you procrastinating are going to go up. But if you weren't going to procrastinate in the first place, those digital distractions won't make you procrastinate. It's the emotions that drive the procrastination. And the other stuff is just window dressing that unfortunately makes it all too easy to actually follow with that procrastination.
Absolutely. Way too easy. So as a mom, and I see obviously some of my kids doing procrastination tendencies and different things, is there like any way that I can help direct and lead that in a positive way to maybe try and not necessarily unlearn this behavior, but, you know, try and motivate them in different ways?
I think, you know, sort of tuning into the emotional side of things, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what's going on with you? You know, how are you feeling about this task? Right. So if you see they're procrastinating something rather than just sort of, you know, the mistake we often make is try and guilt them. We think guilt is a motivator, right? And guilt for someone who's already procrastinating on something or is prone to procrastination, you'll get a backlash on that. It's actually just going to ensure that they'll procrastinate more. And so an approach, and I think it works both for self or when you're working with others, is take more of a compassionate approach. Like, it's like, yeah, I can see you're struggling with this and you haven't done it yet. And you know what? That's okay. We all procrastinate sometimes. So you sort of normalize it a little bit there, try and get rid of the guilt and shame. Because the minute you bring it to awareness, right? Like, we have a lot of negative social norms around procrastination because it's the opposite of productivity. All right.
Yeah.
And so if you're not being productive, you know, and kids know this too, right? Not being productive, it means you're a bad person, you know? And so these are these deep, unconscious, unspoken social norms. And so one way around that is sort of just clear the air and just say, yeah, I can see you're procrastinating, which, you know, you're not trying to do guilt, but it's okay. I procrastinate sometimes too. In fact, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's a good thing, but it does mean it's something that we need to talk about, you know, to try and see what's going on. And so what are you feeling? What sort of emotions are coming up? Get them to talk about their feelings about the task.
Yeah, bring those
emotions up into the light in a compassionate way, right? And then that also teaches them to be compassionate with themselves rather than being hard on themselves and kind of going, yeah, I'm afraid I'm not going to do this right. Or I'm afraid what someone else is going to think. And then talk through those feelings, you know, take the edge off them. And that usually is enough to get people going forward. And, you know, there's always going to be a bit of negative feelings around tasks, right? The idea is not to get rid of them all, right?
Yeah. That's not life.
No, exactly. We're not trying to whitewash out those negative emotions, but we're trying to bring them down to a level that people can manage in a mindful, insightful, and compassionate way so that they can then get on with the things they need to do and reach the goals they want to in life.
Yeah, I love that. Giving acknowledgement on how you're feeling and then walking through that. Yeah, that's great. I like that one. So any last bits of advice that you can give to anyone that does struggle with procrastination, kind of other than the mindfulness, you know, is it really just accepting where we're at the moment and how do we move through that the best?
Well, I think the compassionate side, so being self-compassionate. So we've done some research on getting people to reframe, you know, the things they're procrastinating on in a more compassionate light, you know, normalizing it. There's something in the Kristen Neff's version of self-compassion. It's a really brilliant concept. It's called common humanity. It's this idea that we all make mistakes, we all suffer, right? There's nothing unique about your suffering or your mistake, right? And so, you know, just kind of like, you know, you're not the first person to procrastinate, nor will you be the last. So we tend to hide our procrastination. We feel ashamed of it. And if we normalize it and say, you know what, everyone does this. I'm not happy about it, but everyone does it. And, you know, I don't need being hard on myself, which is going to make it worse. I shouldn't get so consumed with the negative feelings I have about my procrastination or about this task. And then just say, okay, what do I need to do to move on? So that, yeah, I think two-step process, take the edge off the negative feelings. And then the other thing that we've had done some research on, I think, which is really effective, is reclaiming the meaning around that task. Remind yourself, why am I doing this? You know, we've done experiments where we've had people fill out very simple things, you know, completing this task is meaningful for me because I'm filling in that blank. You know, doing this task is meaningful for the people, important for the people in my life because, you know, doing this task will, you know, enhance my personal growth because, and especially for little tasks, we tend to procrastinate sometimes on little things. It's like, oh, it doesn't seem like it has any purpose or meaning. Well, if you see it in a larger framework, in a larger context of all the other things that are important to you, sometimes hooking it into that meaning framework can be enough then to allow you to kind of, you know, work through those negative emotions and accept them a little bit more because now they have a purpose, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. And yeah, really tangible. So thank you. Okay. Thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it. What a fascinating conversation, and actually really just the research and procrastination on the first side of things is just amazing. So I'm glad you were able to continue your research in England and really bring this out to everybody.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, it was great chatting with you, and hopefully it'll be of help to your listeners.
Thank you. It absolutely will. And is there anywhere that people can follow you, or website, social media, anything there?
Yeah, so I do have a website, fuchsiasirwa.com, and I've got a lot of resources on there. There's links to my TED Talk and some animations and other information about procrastination. I'm also on LinkedIn as well. And of course, I've got my self-help book on procrastination, what it is, why it's a problem, and what you can do about it, published by APA Publishers.
Amazing. Okay, I'm going to research that one and start reading. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sirwa, for your time today. I really appreciate it. And all the best to you.
That's great. Thanks so much, Brittany.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. As a mom of three, an endurance sport junkie, and an accountability coach, I get what overwhelm and feelings of high expectation can feel like. By getting crystal clear on tangible goals, I will work with you to create personalized action steps with unwavering accountability to ensure you hit your goals. If this sounds like something you're interested in, reach out to me at MomSweatSanity on Instagram or MomSweatSanity.com for your free exploration call. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to share it. See you next week. You can find me on Instagram at MomSweatSanity.